birth at any time in your life. Advocates and formerly incarcerated people, however, tell a different story. At the end of March, Governor Perry announced that the Texas Department of Criminal Justice will not comply with the Prison Rape Elimination Act. And going forward, we will see what voices raised in opposition to his folly will be able to accomplish, given that they're trying to accomplish it in the state of Texas. Oh, Boston. The bombing just keeps on going. A review of how the government's intelligence agencies handled information that they had before the Boston Marathon bombings last year concluded that it was impossible to know whether anything could have been done differently to prevent the attack, they say. Whether I guess we'll never know since they killed one of the main witnesses who could have, or in fact probably did tell the actual story in his hotel room in Florida. Unfortunately, he didn't make it through that interrogation alive. So I guess we won't be knowing all that much about the bombing. Whether information withheld by Russia until after the bombings could have made a difference was not addressed in an unclassified version of the report, even if the FBI had received details from the Russian wiretaps involving one of the bombing suspects. It's not clear that the U.S. government could have stopped him. Well, there's always... as we saw in Florida, there's always the sudden death during interrogation option. Israelis are cheating the Palestinian people out of their own taxes, which obviously are desperately needed to run the country. Yet another blow, as if the Palestinian people hadn't already enough to contend with. It's Israel's ugliest action yet since the U.S. peace talk charade led by John Kerry. The talks fool no one. These negotiations are meaningless because this time around, as in the past, the Palestinians keep their promises and abide by the terms established in these talks. As for the Israelis, they continue to violate agreements, continue to build settlements and respond to rocks thrown by children with war crimes waged with the 20th century weaponry supplied by, wait for it, well, of course, you know the answer, American taxpayers, that's you and I. And environmental and civil society groups today warned that the Brazilian regulator of genetically modified organisms, that's CTN Bio, did not approve commercial releases of GM mosquitoes in Brazil without full public consultation, access to conclusive field trials data, and a post-release monitoring plan. The groups cautioned that the consequences for human health and the environment are poorly understood and need to be further studied. Guess where they're going to study them? In the Southern Hemisphere. That's where, because life is cheap and it's easy and safe to do these kinds of studies where you're fooling around with human beings, human populations. That's where the studies are going to be carried out. So don't worry, not here. And on that note, we're going to speak with our guests today. We'll forego the temptation to look at the USAID's Twitter adventures in Cuba. It's so tempting to go there, but we won't. Good morning, Ruth. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
So glad that you're both here. Ruth, Emily, the play. We are really excited to be welcome you to the live in the KBOO studios. There are can you tell us first, give us the where and the when and all of that, and then we'll repeat that at the end of the program and put it on the website.
So Boom Arts is working in partnership with Portland State University's School of Theater and Film to present performances of the play Appointment with God at Lincoln Hall Studio Theater, Portland State University, tonight, Friday at 7:30 p.m., tomorrow, Saturday, 7:30 p.m., and Sunday at 2 p.m.
Why is Appointment with God important right now? We touched on it briefly while we were doing the headlines, and I want to remind listeners that what's going on in sub-Saharan Africa is extraordinary, and I think that we have only ourselves to thank. This is meddling. It's AFRICOM, dirty little fingers in there as always. This is a significant landmark play, and politically as well as culturally.
So Appointment with God is written by a Ugandan woman playwright named Deborah Asimwe, And it's about a woman who's applying for a visa to come to the United States from Uganda. But the wonderful thing about the play is that it actually, it tells one specific story of one person, and it also tells a broader story about many countries in the world that have a hard time coming to the United States because they're not granted visas, particularly post 9/11. And then we're also focusing on why that story is important to Portland, and we're including people from many, many countries who are living in Portland and who have we're asking what the journeys that they have taken to come here. So I want to introduce Emily Mendelson. She's here from New York directing the piece. She's worked with Deborah Simwe in Uganda and Rwanda for a number of years. And Emily, can you tell us a little more about that story?
How did you get involved in this?
Well, Deborah and I were classmates at CalArts and started collaborating together there and found that there was a great synergy in our work. We're both very interested in ritual, in how language performs. And so we continued that collaboration through a performance called Cooking Oil that we developed in Rwanda, Uganda, and then Los Angeles.
And tell us about why appointment with God is important.
Mm. For this particular play, it's a shift from there's a young woman coming to this embassy and is struck by how much the embassy this event becomes a performance, that people are asked to perform their identity in a way that's maybe not related to authenticity, but is like a big show. And
right. It's like Kabuki theater, and then she's shut out of it. She doesn't know what to
do. Basically, the embassy staff treat the applicants in inhumane ways, and this reflects an actual incident that she experienced when she was applying for a U.S. visa for the first time. An interesting thing about the play is that it talks about how the different characters who are all applying for a visa have all traveled a lot, and they've traveled to many other countries in the world. They name them: South Africa, Madagascar, Saudi Arabia, all over the world. It's just the United States that they haven't been to, and what is very and it's just the United States that puts up this very, very fortress-like border. We're also involving a visual artist named Patricia Vasquez Gomez, who's recreating an installation that she made called Welcome, and it's about whether Portlanders who are Spanish-speaking immigrants have felt welcomed or not welcomed in Portland. So we've had her recreate the installation in the lobby. So we're asking these questions about what's the journey to come to Portland? What's the experience of people who are from international places who come to live in Portland? What's their experience being here? And what's the journey to come? And it's very interesting because we've had a very international group of people working on it. Everyone has said, wow, this play really echoes my experience. Oh, I remember when I was applying for a visa, I was tongue-tied. I was denied it in under 30 seconds. I wasn't given
question.
A chance.
We are flat out of time. I need to ask you if you can let people know where they can get tickets and where this is being performed and everything. If you can, in just a very short few seconds, characterize the difference between racism as it exists in the United States of America 2014 and racism as it applies to people seeking asylum, seeking visas, coming in from other countries.
There's a line from the show that is, we think we are different, but before these gods, are we? And that kind of sums it up, I think. We think we are different, but before these gods, are we? So the performances are tonight at 7:30. Just come. PSU, Lincoln Hall, the Studio Theater is on the main floor. Join us tonight, 7:30, tomorrow, 7:30, Sundays, 2 p.m. You could just show up, or you can go online, boomarts.org. Thanks.
And since we've got both Ruth and Emily in the studio right now, we may be able to record a little bit more, put that up on the website. All of this information and much more will be on the KBOO. Website, this has been a Cascadia Thought Friday, April 11th, 2014. Sam Parrish engineered the show today. Thanks so much, Sam. Kathleen Stevenson's the AM News and Public Affairs Director. Thanks, Kathleen. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
64 years after Edward R. Murrow's Harvest of Shame broadcast, and farm workers and their families are still being devastated by racist policies under an African-American president. We'll examine the multiple impacts of NAFTA, including the forcing of tens of thousands of migrants living in Mexico into endless daily and weekly commutes into the U.S. for subsistence wages. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and we continue our drumbeat coverage of the struggle of farm workers to be cared for, to get the rights that other folks are guaranteed in this country. And at this moment, we're going to focus on the families of farm workers, what this kind of treatment by the U.S. government, what it means to have to come back and forth, what it means to have your family split up by an arrest and deportation. And joining us to talk about this is Dr. Ann Lopez. She's the director of the Center for Farmworker Families. And Dr. Lopez, welcome to Flashpoints.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, it's good to have you with us. And first of all, paint us a little picture of the work that you do. How do you engage with the families? Tell us about the center.
I did a PhD at UC Santa Cruz during the time in which NAFTA was initiated in 1994. And so I studied the binational population that migrates between West Central Mexico and Watsonville and Salinas, California. And I was appalled. I was absolutely appalled by the policies that have driven millions, literally millions of farmers off their land after they've been farming sustainably for 7,000 years in Mexico, and really forcing them as only one of a very few survival choices to come to the United States. And since most of them were farmers, they become farm workers. And today, about 70% of the farm worker population in California is undocumented. And they're basically economic refugees of NAFTA, which the U.S. supported greatly. And the human rights violations, the devastation that I've seen, the family fracturing, the suffering, the incredible and inordinate suffering within this binational population that goes unseen every day as we buy our vegetables and fruits in the markets. I was devastated. Listening to the stories, I come from a science background, and I was not prepared for the emotional cost of listening to so many basic horror stories of what families have gone through and are still going through. So when I completed my PhD and wrote my book, I wrote the book, The Farm Worker's Journey, in hopes that this would create awareness. And I decided that if the American public knew what I knew, they would not tolerate these semi-slave-like conditions that we have today in the fields of California and elsewhere in the country. And so I decided that I had to do something after I finished my postdoc at Berkeley. And so I started basically out of nothing, the Center for Farmworker Families. We're a 501c3 organization, and our main focus and mission is to create awareness about these horrific conditions and to do whatever we can to mitigate the incredible suffering that is obvious in the population.
All right, so, Dr. Lopez, let me ask you to back up a little bit. Because I don't think people really understand when you say that these circumstances have been devastating and made worse by free trade. Explain how that happens.
Okay. Basically, prior to NAFTA, which went into effect in January 1994, the U.S., as the largest corn producer, wanted to get its corn into Mexico. Prior to NAFTA, if a truckload of corn, say from Iowa, came to the border, there would be a border guard that says, okay, that'll be a tariff of so many hundreds of dollars. And the person driving the truck, the farmer, would say, well, gee, I can't make a profit, and turn around and stay in the United States. And this is how Mexico protected its small producer and subsistence farmers, by having these tariffs at the border. So big corn, industrial corn producers that are subsidized by the U.S. Department of Agriculture could not get their corn into Mexico and undercut the price that these small farmers have long expected. So the goal of NAFTA, when you talk about free trade, it's an economic term, not a political term. What it means is that you get rid of those tariffs. So supposedly in the NAFTA Accords, there was supposed to be a 15-year phase-out period for those tariffs. In reality, the tariffs were eliminated within 30 months. And I was down in the countryside interviewing farmers during this time. And basically what happened is U.S. corn, most of it hybrid or genetically modified, began being dumped into the Mexican countryside literally by the tons, and still is today. And this undercut the price that the farmers had gotten from the government for years, since the Mexican Revolution. And so it basically put them out of business. As the farmers told me, I get half of what I used to get for my yield of corn. And all of these farmers, they are subsistence, but they all sell a portion to the government so that they can purchase things like shoes and cooking oil and farming implements and